Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, how is your day going? Let me tell you something. It is raining as fuck here in New York.
Not sure how I feel about that. Every once in a while, I don't mind the rain. What a weird way to start the show off, telling you about the weather patterns I like. A lot of fun stuff to get to today. A lot of sad stuff to get to today. We have some more Ben Carson silliness. No, this time he's not talking about the pyramids and aliens and biblical shit. He's just flat out being a hypocrite when it comes to policy positions. The guy can't help himself. I mean, it's like he says something dumber and dumber and dumber. It sounds like I'm talking about the movie. Every day. And what's amazing is that he's still holding steady at number two. In the polls, although maybe it dropped, it will drop, I should say, after this last debate. So I have an update on the 9/11 responders and the help that they got briefly, and the position they're in today. It's pretty sad that Congress is doing what they're doing in terms of dragging their feet on helping the first responders. They passed a bill about this a while ago, but they seem to be getting lazy again, and they're not on top of it. Remember, last time it took Jon Stewart and Fox News to talk about this before anything substantive happened. And then later on in the show, we have the Republican War on Philosophers. That's a fun conversation. My friends over at TYT couldn't stop laughing at that the night of the debate. There's some follow-up stuff to that. So Marco Rubio went on Fox News to discuss this, and these guys just made an ass of themselves. And more including, does India have a Hindu Taliban? That doesn't sound good, does it? So we'll get to that much later on in the show, but let's go ahead and get started here. And I do want to kick it off with Ben Carson. I got one now, and then I got another one later where he keeps being ridiculous. The Associated Press has an interesting article out on Ben Carson's shameless hypocrisy. They say, quote, he has maintained a business relationship with a close friend convicted of defrauding insurance companies and testified on his behalf, even as he called for such crimes to be punished harshly. Pittsburgh dentist Alfonso Costa pleaded guilty to a felony count of healthcare fraud after the FBI found he charged for procedures that he never performed. All right, now let me pause here to say, I get it if you have a friend and your friend gets in trouble and you want to back up your friend, and I know we're all human. We like to think that when push comes to shove, we can put principles above loyalty to your friends and family, but most people can't do that. So if it was just that in the story, I honestly would not be covering it. But there's a layer of hypocrisy, so let's continue. Though the crime carries a potential sentence of up to 10 years in federal prison, Costa was able to avoid prison time after Carson helped petition a federal judge for leniency. That's different from the position Carson took in 2013, saying that those convicted of healthcare fraud should go to prison for at least a decade and be forced to forfeit all of one's personal possessions. All right, so this guy committed fraud, committed it over nearly a five-year period. He charged more than 50 patients for procedures that weren't performed, and the cost was a total of $40,000. Now, again, if this was just a story about Ben Carson sticking by his friend when his friend did something fucked up, whatever. But after Ben Carson stuck up for this guy and was on his side and testified in his case and helped him out, after that, he said in 2013 that, if I was president, what I would do is I would make it a minimum 10-year prison sentence for if doctors do exactly what his friend did, who he went to testify for to try to get him off. So he has no problem, as he's proven on other issues as well, he has no problem just brazenly lying. He'll go out there and say, yeah, this is what I'm in favor of. Really? Well, then why'd you help your friend and basically come out on the exact opposite side of it? Well, for my friends, it's different. Ooh, that's a bad road to go down. I mean, this is the way that petty dictators act when they're in control. If you're my friend, if you're my family, you're above the law, you get to do what you want, and we'll punish harshly anybody who's not in the in-group if they break the law. So this is a horrible thing, and look, it's a pattern. With Ben Carson, it's just flat out a pattern. We've seen him lie time and time and time again. And the biggest one of all should have gotten much more media play, and it didn't. It was when he said, no, I didn't have any relationship whatsoever with Manatech, the supplement company. And come to find out, not only did he have a relationship with them, he got paid, and he would give speeches where he talked about how awesome the product was, and he went as far as to say that their products helped cure his cancer. This is a top neurosurgeon who said that. There's no evidence to back up those claims, by the way, and it's simply a case of he was a scam artist. He did the same thing that Mike Huckabee did. Mike Huckabee pretended there were these diabetes cures and these cancer cures. He would send out through his email. Companies would use it. They'd send out, oh, read this Bible scripture and take cinnamon or whatever the fuck it was, and you'll be cured of your cancer. Guys, these are simply scam artists. These are simply guys who were willing to do anything to make a buck. They were totally unscrupulous, and then they lie about it after the fact. And it's amazing that they get as far as they do, but then again, is it really? Because we're talking about today's Republican Party, and they've almost all lost their minds. I mean, what? We have John Kasich, who's 50% sane, saving the people on the stage at the debates, and Rand Paul, who just recently started being himself again, being a libertarian. So, okay, you have two people on stage who aren't utterly crazy, but everybody else is a joke and a liar and oftentimes worse. A scam artist like we're talking about with Ben Carson and like we're talking about with Mike Huckabee. So the problem is it's a pattern, and we know what this guy's capable of, and he's willing to just brazenly lie and act like it's nothing. He really is a pathological liar. I mean, the stories that he told in his book, which have proven not to be true, they're lies that are just so over the top. And like when he was going around saying, when I was a kid, I was violent, and then they proved that actually didn't happen. He'd never had instances of trying to stab people and hit his mom with a hammer and all that shit. Like, why would you even lie about that? But he did. He lied about that. So he just can't help himself. He just can't stop lying. You know, at TYT they have a theory as to why he was lying about that, how he gets to do the Jesus redemption story and he gets to play into the dangerous black youth narrative that the Republicans like. And it's very calculated in how Carson is doing it. Is that true? I really don't know. But what I do know is the evidence shows he indeed did lie. He also lied about that final exam that he supposedly took at college, where he said, well, nobody else wanted to take it because our original final exams caught on fire. What does that even mean? And then we had to go in and take it again, and so we went, and I was the only one who stayed, and that shows how much of a leader I am. And it's not true. It's not true. He's even made up the fucking class. He said it was called Perceptions 101, and there was no class called Perceptions 101. Man, it's unbelievable. And as all this is happening, he's solidly number two right now in the Republican field. Let that sink in a little bit. A guy who's a proven liar, solidly number two. I mean, what? I don't know why I'm surprised, but I am surprised. I'm perpetually surprised. I mean, this is the party that embraced George W. Bush. This is the party that, years after it was proven that it's not true that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction and that he was connected to Al-Qaeda, a majority of the party was still like, no, yeah, totally, that's true. Bush said it, it's true. Oh, God. This is the state of the Republican Party today. It is not pretty. All right, now, let me move on here. We'll come back to Ben Carson later. We have another interesting story about him later. Well, now let's talk about a very serious issue. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act was a bill that passed in 2010 that authorized about $4.4 billion to 9/11 victims and first responders to deal with their health care costs and restitution. Well, now that money is running out, and it's the original bill is beginning to expire. And the Congressional Budget Office crunched the numbers to see just how big of a shortfall there is. So in other words, what do these victims of 9/11 and the first responders, what do they need? How much money do they need, and how much do they actually have? And they say that the answer is, the shortfall is, quote, somewhere between $11.5 and $14.5 billion. So for those of you who don't know the backstory of this, it took John Stewart, of all people, and Fox News, Shep Smith, I believe, to get on the case about this bill in order to get it passed in the first place. So this bill came up to take care of the first responders, and it didn't get through Congress. Unbelievable, but it didn't get through Congress. Well, John Stewart heard about this, and if I'm not mistaken, dedicated like a week on his show to interview the first responders who were having health problems and the government wouldn't pay for their bills. And then that spurred Fox News and Shep Smith to talk about it, and then everybody in Congress was like, oh, wait, did we vote no? We meant to vote yes. So here, pass it now. And it got through. Now, it was a temporary bill, though. And it wasn't all the money that's needed in the long run. Well, now, like I said, it's expiring and it's coming back up. And we pick it up from there. So Huffington Post reports, quote, the new bill Maloney and others have proposed would fully meet that need, the $11-plus billion shortfall. And it has strong bipartisan support in the House and Senate, where 244 representatives and 65 senators have signed on as sponsors. But that bill has yet to advance, and committee chairmen in the House have begun to advance their own versions. One bill, drafted by House Judiciary Chairman Bob Goodlatte, calls for another temporary compensation fund, again spending $2.8 billion. That would leave the fund short by up to $8.8 billion. The Energy and Commerce Committee, which has jurisdiction over the health treatment component, floated a draft document also calling for another five-year program. That would leave the treatment effort about $2 billion short of anticipated costs. All right, so let me explain exactly what this means. An overwhelming majority in the House and the Senate say, okay, if this comes up, if this gets to us, we're going to pass it. Okay, the numbers are solidly on the side of passing it. But you have Republicans in committee going, yeah, or not. Or I can propose a bill that still leaves over an $8 billion shortfall. That's one of the bills. And the other one is, or I could propose a bill that still leaves over a $2 billion shortfall. Take your pick. So you have Republicans in congressional subcommittees saying, yeah, we're not going to fully fund the victims of 9/11 and the first responders. That's not an option. No matter what, we're going to short you billions. It's just a matter of how many billions. This is unbelievable. I mean, these committees and these congressmen and these senators, they should be shamed. I mean, are you kidding me? Bob Goodlatte, a Republican of Virginia, what is wrong with you? If there was ever a case where it should be bipartisan support and it's a no-brainer, it's to help out the first responders of 9/11. Guys, when they showed up and then the first tower collapsed, everybody was breathing in all of these toxic chemicals. The particulate dust that was there made people incredibly sick. Some people got sick right away. Some people it took years and years to set in. And they had emphysema, and they got cancer, and they had all these different problems. And like I told you originally, Washington said, no, we're not going to pay for your care. You answered the call of duty to help your country, and you didn't blink. You were brave and courageous, and you showed up, no questions asked, and now we're going to say, fuck you. And then they finally got it through, and then now it has to come back up again. And you have people saying, well, maybe we'll help you out a little bit, but I'm still going to shortchange. Oh, that's totally unacceptable. And what this shows you is their priorities. And that's why this is so heartbreaking. I mean, it proves something that we talk about on the show almost every day, which is that when your job is to represent Wall Street, represent the big banks, represent the multinational corporations, represent the elite. When that's your job, stuff like this is on the back burner. You know, you don't think about it. And then when it comes up, you go, oh, maybe we'll spare a couple billion, but we're still going to shortchange you $8 billion or $2 billion, depending on what kind of mood we're in. No, this is further evidence that our government is broken. Because here's what I guarantee you. If you poll the American people, hey, should we fund the health care and further restitution for the families of the first responders to 9/11, you're going to get over 95%. Democrats and Republicans across the board are going to say, are you fucking stupid? If there was ever something that government should exist for, yeah, we all have no problem paying a dollar of our taxes, and it wouldn't even work out, so it must be much less than that, to make sure that these guys are okay. So the Democrats and the Republicans agree. But the people in Washington, the pricks, say no. And again, to be fair, the people in the Senate and the House of Representatives overwhelmingly say yes, but it's just a select number of Republicans on the committee that say, this is absolutely incredible. Everybody should be outraged by this. And the mainstream media, where the fuck are you? I mean, Jon Stewart left. What, do we have to get him back in order for him to fucking talk about this again, in order to make it happen? Is that how pathetic you are, CNN? MSNBC, where the fuck are you? Fox News, again, hey, chime up. Speak up, son. Waiting for it. Shouldn't be at this point. We should fund it, no questions asked, and anybody who stands in the way, they should be shamed endlessly. Bob Goodlatte, you're a disgrace to your country. All right, now, let me do one more here, and then we'll take our first break. This one involves Elizabeth Warren. That's nice, isn't it? American Action Network, which is a conservative group, ran an ad during the most recent Republican debate on Fox Business Network. And in the ad, they attacked the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Let's watch.
Call it CFPB, Washington's latest regulatory agency, designed to interfere with your personal financial decisions. That car loan you needed, your mortgage, that personal loan. With the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, those who need help the most are denied. Washington, D.C., controlling your decisions, limiting your opportunity. Tell Congress to stop the CFPB now, before they deny you.
It's amazing how disingenuous that is. So for those of you who don't know, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau came about after the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, and it was the brainchild of Senator Elizabeth Warren. And the idea behind it is, hey, we should have somebody looking out for the consumers to make sure that the corporations and the financial institutions don't rip them off. Because, for example, leading up to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, there were these ballooning interest adjustable rate mortgages that were, people were handing them out like hotcakes. These corporations were like, hey, you want a house? You want a house here? And we'll give you negative 5% down, which means that they give you money. And then, you know, you have to pay the mortgage over time, and like I said, it's a ballooning rate, so you know, you might have a relatively low payment the first 2 or 3 years, but then boom, it explodes to something you can't afford. Now, the only thing that was pushing that was deregulation and greed. So we didn't have great regulations that said, hey, you can't do that, and you had greedy corporations who would sell these horrible mortgages. They were toxic packages, and then they turn around and sell the packages elsewhere, and they would get rich in the short term. But in the long term, the economy was a house of cards. So you needed something, various regulatory agencies, and something like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to be able to step in and say, okay, you're not looking out for the consumer here. You're fucking them to get rich in the short term, and we need to prevent that. And they do many, many things. Like, here's one example. I was lucky enough to benefit from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau because I lost one of my credit card or a debit card or something one night, and I had to call up to cancel it. And when I called up, I forget which company it was too, by the way. I would throw them under the bus right now, but I do forget which one it was. They said, hey, do you want identity theft protection along with that? So, you know, if this happens again, you're protected, yada, yada. I wasn't thinking, I was hungover. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever it is. So they took like $5 a month extra from me or something. Turns out when the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau did an investigation into what those things actually were, it was just totally fake. They had no identity theft protection. They would just tell people, I'm going to sell you identity theft protection. They would offer you no extra services, and they would just take your money. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said, you're not allowed to do that. That's illegal. And I got a check in the mail for however much it was, a couple $100, but all the money they had robbed from me. So this is what they do, and the American people overwhelmingly support it. Which is why when I looked at the like-to-dislike ratio on that ad, which is on YouTube, it was like 95% dislike because people smell the bullshit from a mile away. All they're doing is appealing to emotions. You saw they had the banner in the background of Elizabeth Warren like she's some sort of a dictator. And you have the scary music and, oh my God, look how bad. This is like communism here. We got to stop this. Now, it's funny I mentioned commie dictators, because that's exactly what Elizabeth Warren said. She responded to it. She was watching the Fox Business Republican debate. She saw this, and then she said, I got a response to this. This is ridiculous. So she went on Twitter, and she said, so can we talk about that ad that just ran during the GOP debate where I look like a commie dictator? Wall Street has a problem. They know the CFPB is working, and it's incredibly popular with the families it helps. The CFPB has forced the big financial companies to return more than $11 billion to people they cheated on credit cards. That's me, mortgages, etc. Thousands of dollars on a TV ad is nothing compared to the money the big banks save if their GOP buddies go after the CFPB. Wall Street knows if they soften CFPB support, the GOP will feel better undercutting the agency in closed-door deals. So here's my message to Wall Street and their GOP buddies. We're ready to fight back to protect the CFPB. That's exactly right. So they're going to do this propaganda campaign. They're just going to do an onslaught of media lies to do the equivalent of when they said about Obamacare, they want to kill your grandma, they want to pull the plug, they have death panels. And they're going to try to chip away at public support for the CFPB so that the Republicans can come in and gut it. Not because they care about the American people, but the exact opposite. They care about the corporations and the financial institutions, and they want to protect their right to rip you the fuck off. Well, we're here to call out the bullshit, and so is Elizabeth Warren. Okay. So let's take our first break here. And then when we come back, I got another Ben Carson story that is guaranteed to bring a smile to your face because of how ridiculous it is. He weighs in on the merits of universal education. Now, let's just say he's not a fan. And then also, we'll continue to discuss the new Republican war on philosophers. Oh, it's so funny. By the way, if you guys haven't seen the Young Turks clip on that, I tweeted it out last night. You have to check it out. I mean, they can't stop laughing. Jenks especially cannot stop laughing at the idea that the Republicans put forth that philosophers really are the problem in the United States of America. They really are so ridiculous. I didn't even catch it, to be honest. I think, like, I caught the welder line when Marco Rubio said we need fewer philosophers and more welders or something like that. But I was so busy tweet-storming that it didn't land in my brain, so I didn't notice it. But they're not kidding. Like, multiple candidates on stage were like, philosophers. Scoffing at them and shit. Well, now they're essentially doubling down on it, and Fox News is going to help them out in their war on philosophers, which is hilarious. Then later on, we get to restrictions of free speech in Israel. quite depressing. And I'll tell you why I may no longer be allowed. I've never been to Israel, but I will not be allowed in Israel. Really an incredible story. We'll discuss that. And Ted Cruz is going to make an insane comment about who's qualified to be president and who isn't qualified to be president. This is from a week or so ago, but I missed it, and it's totally relevant, so we're going to cover it. All right, we'll talk about all that stuff and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Back to Ben Carson. Here we go again. Ben Carson is going to talk about the evils of free college at Liberty University. Let's check it out.
Because the people are not well informed, all it takes is unscrupulous politicians and news media, and off the people go in a completely wrong direction, listening to all kinds of propaganda and inculcating that and to their method of thinking. And then it becomes real easy for them to swallow things. If they don't really understand the financial situation of the country, and somebody comes along and says, free college for everybody, they'll say, oh, what a wonderful person. And they have no idea that all you're talking about is hastening the destruction of the nation.
Come on, Ben. Hastening the destruction of the nation by wanting universal college. Do you not know that other modern nations have free college? Are you not aware of this? It's gotten to the point now where it's impossible to just say, hey, I disagree with the liberals when they say they want free college. Now you're, quote, hastening the destruction of the nation. If there was ever any proposal that did not hasten the destruction of the nation, it would be educating people. I mean, really? That's the thing you pick, say, hastening the destruction of the nation. You know what much more likely hasten the destruction of the nation? The war in Iraq. The entire war on terror. The fact that we're doing interventions in 7 different countries right now. The NSA spying on everybody and their grandma. Guantanamo Bay, which is making it so that jihadists can recruit terrorists all the time. But all those things, various wars and NSA spying, Ben Carson's like, yeah, I got no problem with that. I'm actually on the side of that. But what's hastening the destruction of the nation? Education. That's unbelievable. And I always want to ask these guys, like, do you not realize that as of right now, we actually have education funded via tax dollars, you know, through high school? Is that some sort of egregious downfall of the country? I can't believe that we also send elementary school kids to class? That's so wrong. That's so wrong. Why? Why is that wrong? Do you not understand this is just a matter of priorities? So, all right, every modern country has taxes, and they have a government. Whether, you know, you could disagree on the size or whatever, but all of them have a government. So then the question is just, how much do we take in taxes, and then what do we spend it on? Wouldn't on the top of almost anybody's list be, well, how about we educate the youth? How about we make sure that they have, you know, skills for the real world, alongside also in education and more abstract things like philosophy and psychology and stuff like that? Who would say, no, I'm against that? Well, we actually know who would be against it. People like the Taliban, for example. They're like, yeah, women are not allowed to go to school because we say so. You know, extremely primitive, far-right fundamentalists are against that. And, I mean, Ben Carson is speaking at Liberty University here, so I guess it kind of makes sense on that level. Jeez, there's also a massive irony in, he said at the beginning, quote, if the people are not well-informed, and then he goes on to say, they'll support free college. If the people are not well-informed, if the people are not educated, they'll support free education. My head just exploded from the massive catch-22 that is. No, Ben, you have to realize, man, we're not anarchists, we're not anarcho-capitalists, so you're going to have some government, and the question is, what should the government fund? Somebody like me and the American people, if you look at the polling data, if you tell them to talk about what things make sense to be free, they'll tell you, we want healthcare, we want education, we want infrastructure, we want national defense. There's certain things that are just reasonable to cover via taxes. That doesn't mean everything, but it does mean that there are some things. And in the country we live in today, in the state of affairs in America today, it's obvious that we're spending far too much on corporate welfare, tax cuts for the rich, militarism, and stuff like that. We can cut back there and fund, you know, universal education by reducing there, spending more on education. And all you have to do, like Bernie Sanders says, for example, is like a transaction tax on Wall Street for the people who trade a trillion times a day and they're already worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. Just a transaction tax and you're done. and then you wipe the slate clean for, you know, all the student loan debt that exists right now, which is a crisis, and you bring America to the same place that other modern nations have gotten to. But that's Ben Carson for you. He's against making America more of a modern nation. Okay. Now, I want to go to the Republican War on Philosophy. Oh, classic. The Republican candidates at the recent Fox Business debate took multiple jabs at philosophers, and Marco Rubio continued doing that after the debate. Here he is on Fox News.
Talk about something else. Welding. You said we need welders, that welders get paid. Well, the philosophers, we're getting too many people with philosophy degrees. Here is your tweet. The Google Trends, searches for welding classes are spiking 1,300%. Do you happy to be behind the welders today?
Well, look, that's an great, it's not just welders, machinists, airplane mechanics, car technicians. These are good-paying jobs. For the life of me, I don't know why we stopped teaching Americans to do that kind of work, to work with their hands. These are good-paying jobs. We can be teaching kids to do that when they're 16 or 17 years of age.
Right.
And there's a shortage of people. You go around the country, as I do, to these manufacturing facilities, they can't find qualified workers. We should be training more young Americans to take on vocational careers, good-paying jobs.
Plato would have been so much more successful if he just welded and stopped yapping about his philosophy.
Well, if you can find a welder, if you can find a philosopher that can weld, that's pretty good.
That's great. Senator, I'm off to do some research.
You should have done the research before the segment, Slapstick. Oh, my God. Brian Kilmeade just argued that Plato should have shut the fuck up and did something else. One of the best philosophers ever. He's like, Plato would have been better off if he did something else, you know? Should have stopped yapping about his philosophy. Oh my God, that's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard in my life. Oh my God, that's too far even for Fox News. You just argued against Plato being a philosopher. You said he should have done something else. Unreal, unreal. No, but this goes to the heart of a divide on the right and the left that's been there for a long, long time. I mean, the right-wingers typically favor, you know, sending people to school, if they're going to learn at school, practical stuff to function in the real world. You know, teach them a trade, like you'll hear conservatives say. Teach the kid a trade so we'll be all right when he's older. You'll hear him say something like that. And, you know, liberals historically have said, well, why limit yourself to that? We should also teach abstract ways of thinking and intellectual pursuits and logic and philosophy and psychology and all these other things that might not necessarily have a practical real-world application in the short run, but, hey, it's something that you enrich your life if you learn more about the world and the way that brilliant people have thought throughout history, whether it is Plato or somebody like Freud or whoever. And look, to be kind to the right on this, they're not 100% wrong. Like, I'm not against teaching practical things for functionality and how to live in the world in school. In fact, I'm in favor of that. But the thing is, you can't be against the intellectual pursuits also. So you need both of those things in school. But what we see on the right from somebody like Marco Rubio is that, you know, he mocks philosophy. And Brian Kilmeade literally mocking Plato. Brilliant philosophers. Why would you do that? So you're just against intellectual pursuits. So don't get mad at us when we call you the anti-intellectual party. You're wearing it on your fucking sleeves, guys. You are the anti-intellectual party. You don't want people to learn about philosophy and psychology and all these abstract ways of thinking, which are very important. You only want them to learn to be a goddamn welder, goddammit. Maybe a plumber or something. I took a shit, fix it, goddammit. This is a real world you live in now, sonny boy. No, that's not all there is to life. There's more than just that. So it's really sad to hear this. And also keep in mind that everything else they said there simply wasn't true. So, for example, when Marco Rubio's like, you know, I've been around the country, I've spoken to people who say there's a shortage of people for different jobs. Okay, but that's just not correct. there are more people than job openings in the country. By a lot. And a lot of the jobs that people have, mind you, also give them a working poor existence where they work full-time, but they don't make enough money to survive. So only an ignorant person or a stupid person would blame the people in that scenario. There's obviously systemic flaws. But Marco Rubio just wants to say, like, yeah, you know, people are lazy and they don't want to get their hands dirty and they don't want to work hard anymore, all these lazy liberals and how they're living. They're the problem. The problem's not the system. Well, then why are you trying to run to be the president of that system? I mean, if you think there's nothing wrong with it and it's the people's fault, there are a lot of job openings. There's a shortage of people. But no, there's not. There's not a shortage of people. And again, I get it, guys. I'm in favor of both approaches to education. Teach practical real-world stuff and also teach intellectual pursuits and teach philosophy and psychology and stuff like that. But Marco Rubio just is pretending that the problem is, it's not the economy and systemic factors and income inequality. It's, you know, these people, there's a shortage of people. They're just too lazy to actually go do the hard work that's necessary. No, people are willing. They're willing to do the jobs. And then finally, there's also this fact. They said that welders make more than philosophers. That's not correct. Raw Story reports on this. Quote, salary.com shows that the median annual salary for philosophy instructors comes in at about $42,000, while an intermediate level welder makes about $41,000. The disparity grows when a philosophy professor's income is compared with a senior welder's, $90,000 versus $50,000. So a philosopher makes much more. The Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that in 2012, the most recent year for which it posted data, the country's roughly 357,000 welders, cutters, solderers, and brazers, never seen that word before, I was going to say brazzers, but that's a porn giveaway, made about $36,000 a year. However, the job outlook was slower than average at about 6%. The BLS reported only 23,000 post-secondary philosophy teachers in the U.S., making about $71,000, though its projected growth rate was 10 to 19%. So, there you have it. You make more money as a philosophy professor than you do as a welder. And he actually said the opposite. He said, no, you make more money as a welder. But that's not true. So he's arguing from a narrative. He's not arguing from what the actual facts are. He's arguing from this position of, well, my belief is that there's not enough people willing to get their hands dirty, and they need to do that in order to be successful. And the problem is, Marco, that your gut instinct on this and your feeling on it is just not correct. So you might want to actually do some book learning before you speak. But I know, you're probably off welding somewhere instead of reading a book. All right. Now, let's get to a troubling development in Israel. A bill that bans people from entering Israel who support a boycott advanced on Wednesday. Haaretz reports, quote, the Knesset approved the preliminary reading of a bill forbidding entry into Israel of anyone who calls for a boycott against Israel. The bill, which passed 55-31, followed the decision of the EU to adopt new guidelines for labeling products from Israeli settlements. All right, so let me pause here to explain that to you. There's this new movement now where people are saying, hey, do boycotts and a divestment and sanctions on Israel in order to get them to do a two-state deal, in order to get them to stop the occupation. So the EU is saying, well, if you have products that are made in these particular parts of Israel, they should be labeled because, you know, a lot of people don't want to support the occupation. They don't want to support the fact that you're blocking a two-state deal. So Israel's outraged by that, and they're swinging back, and now we have this bill where they say, okay, well, how about we just reject people from entering the country if they're coming from elsewhere and they've supported a boycott. They say the politician who submitted the bill said people are, quote, invited to boycott Israel from Syria. The absurd situation in which a person exploits Israeli democracy and what Israel has to offer to advance boycotts against It is about to stop. All right, now, I find that hilarious because that's what we call a red herring. Nobody said that. Nobody said, I am going to boycott Israel because they're a democracy in the Middle East and they stand for liberal values. That is why I am boycotting them, because I would like them to be a dictatorship or theocracy. Nobody ever said that. Nobody said that. If you listen to what they're saying and you characterize what they're saying properly, you would say, well, we're against people who are boycotting us because they want us to stop the occupation and they want us to do a two-state deal. But see, you can't win in a head-on debate on that front, so what do? Just make up your opponent's position. It's not only a red herring, it's also a straw man. You say, oh, people are against Israeli democracy, that's why they're boycotting us. No, but they're not. They love the fact that you're a democracy, but they want you to allow for a Palestinian state as well, and they want you to stop the occupation. I know, crazy. You must be an anti-Semite if you believe that. Interior Minister Sylvain Shalom, who responded in the name of the government here, this is also the peace minister, the person that Netanyahu appointed to head peace talks, who's not in favor of a Palestinian state. So another good faith effort by Netanyahu here. Yeah, the guy who we're going to bring in to negotiate a state doesn't want a Palestinian state. Brilliant. He said this, quote, the bill is no doubt extreme. Oh, kind of you to admit that. And there needs to be a thoughtful discussion about it and provisions for exceptions. The government is supportive, subject to coordinating legislation with it. So, in other words, what he's saying is, well, I mean, sure, this bill is a little strong. We don't support it necessarily in its current form, but we are supportive of the idea as long as you add some other legislation with it that allows for some exceptions. Oh, I see. So you don't crack down on free speech all the way. You just go maybe 50% or 30%. Just a little bit of cracking down on free speech. No, no, no. Guys, this is a terrible path to go down. Now, we're consistent on this, man. I've said time and time again, whether I agree with the speech or don't agree with the speech is irrelevant. You don't, lock people up for free speech, and you don't say, I'm not going to let you in my country if, you say something I disagree with. I was just defending the other day. There's a reality star in the UK who basically said, I forgot exactly what it was, but like something like people with Down syndrome should all be put down. Okay, no, but she's in court now, she's on trial, and she might get fined a few $1,000s, or she might go to jail for, I think, up to 6 months or something like that. No, that's crazy. You can say she's wrong, I disagree with her, but she's allowed to say it, and we're not going to penalize you via law. Same thing here. You don't have to agree with BDS. You don't have to agree with people who say things that are against Israel. But you should let them say it without saying, you're not allowed in my country anymore. All right, then shut the fuck up when you say, oh, we believe in civil liberties and free speech, except for when we don't. Because you don't. You don't if you want to take this stance. Now, I'm not saying everything is equal, because we know that, if you draw Muhammad in some countries, you can get killed. So it's not equal. I'm not saying it's equal. But that's not a counter-argument. It's not a counter-argument to say, well, they're worse with their restrictions of free speech, so why can't we get away with just a little bit of restricting free speech? Because it's still wrong. You're still violating the principle. And, of course, to further my vulnerability on this, as I've said before on this topic, and I'll continue to say because I think it's right, I do support BDS. And it's not because I'm anti-Israel. It's because I'm pro-Israel. Because the only way Israel is going to be secure in the long run is if you do a two-state deal. The more you occupy, the more you oppress, the more you don't allow a state and don't allow Palestinian self-determination, the more radicals and terrorists you're going to create. So you are destabilizing the region further, and you're your own worst enemy if you continue to do what you're doing right now. So I support BDS because Netanyahu ain't going to do a two-state deal unless he's fucking forced to. And that's how you force him to. If I'm the U.S., I lift the veto at the U.N. on a Palestinian state. I say I'm going to cut the billions of dollars in aid we give you every year. And, yeah, I'm going to support BDS. I'm totally on board with that. And this is where people cry, you're singling out Israel, and that's not fair. But that's not true. I'm not singling out Israel. How many times have I told you I would cut off economic ties with Saudi Arabia today if I could? So those arguments are nonsense. Take a hike with them, okay? The reality is you have to get a two-state deal. You have to get move closer to peace in the region somehow. That's the way to do it, and the best way to go about it is BDS. And I always find it hilarious. Like, what do you want the Palestinians to do? So if they directly fight back against occupation, they're called terrorists, and then you're allowed to shoot back and kill them, obviously. And I'm obviously against fighting back violently. But they fight back violently, they're terrorists, and you get to fire back. They go to the UN, Israel says, no, we reject your plans, as they did recently when they proposed the 1967 border through Jordan. And then they try this way, and you go, economic terrorism. Now you're, as I've heard other people argue, you're unfairly punishing all Israelis for the actions of, just the bad actions of the government. So what do you want the Palestinians to do? If they don't get a state by going to the UN, they don't get it by directly fighting back, and now you're saying they can't do it by doing a boycott and sanctions and divestment, what do you want them to do? Just accept their fate? Hey, you're occupied, you're oppressed, you don't have a state, you don't have self-determination, and I don't give a fuck. Is that your position? Because that position is stupid. It is dumb. It shows that you do not give a fuck about the Palestinians. So, the real answer, as I've said, is you support that, and then it puts pressure over time where they're going to want to do a deal. And we know because it worked in apartheid South Africa. And don't tell me that that comparison isn't accurate, because it is. And, final thing here, why do you think they're so against it? Why do you think they want to now say, get out of my country if you say, you know, you're in favor of boycotting us? It's not just the reason they say about the EU labeling products. It's because it's fucking working. It's because it's gonna work in the long run. It always works when you put economic pressure on a country, when you do sanctions, when you do a boycott, when you do divestments. If you actually stick to it and you actually do it, a country can't function if its, you know, revenue sources are being starved. They can only take it so long. And remember, the key is always there for them. Hey, you want this to stop? Easy. Just do a two-state deal right now. Do a two-state deal on the 1967 borders, share Jerusalem, build a giant fucking wall, both get full UN recognition. Just do it. That's it. You can stop all of the economic hurt if you just do that. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. So you can either continue to be arrogant and wrong and oppressive in what you're doing to the Palestinians, or you could say, enough. You put me in a corner, I give up, this is what we're going to do. And then the rest of the world immediately gets off your back. Those are your options. Okay. Let me take a break. And then when we come back, we got Ted Cruz, who's going to make an insane comment about who can be president. Then we have a 56-year-old construction worker who was murdered, or at the very least it was manslaughter. A guy who had a run-in with the cops, and the cops got a little too trigger-happy in a certain kind of way, I guess you could say. And the results were disastrous. And then we'll also get into, I really like this story because it really highlights something that very few other people are talking about, the Hindu fundamentalists. We've spoken about them a few times before recently, but there's a good article out today in The Guardian on that. There's an argument to be made that Modi, the prime minister, and the crowd he runs with, they're kind of like the Hindu Taliban. Now, that sounds extreme, but I'm going to run through some of the points that they make in here, and you're going to see how one can think that. And it's a scary thing because there are there's a significant minority community in India, and India is very, very populated. So there are a lot of potential downsides to having a crazy right-wing fundamentalist in power, as there usually is everywhere. All right, so let's take our break now, and then we come back. We'll talk about all that and much more. Stay right there, guys. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back.
my fuck America.
Cruz here. Hopefully I don't lose it, but I may. We'll see.
No, this is an important question. This is in fact
a little premature there. Ted Cruz is going to make an insane comment about who's qualified to be president at a conservative Christian conference here. Let's listen.
This is the most important question that I ask any candidate who's running for political office, and that is this. How important is it for the President of the United States to fear God? And what does that mean to you? Any president who doesn't begin every day on his knees isn't fit to be commander-in-chief of this country. Amen.
I have so many things to say about this. First of all, you could have phrased that differently. On his knees. You know, I, Ted Cruz, like to start every day on my knees. Preferably sucking a hairy Russian man off. What? I wasn't supposed to say that. You know, Joe Rogan actually says that he thinks Ted Cruz is gay. Believe it or not, I never actually picked up on that. Like, I know the whiny, me, I'm Ted Cruz, me. I know the voice and everything, like, I would always mock that and stuff, but he never struck me as gay, and I think that's because most of the stories we cover about him are not really about him being anti-gay, where he's against gay marriage. He is against gay marriage, to be perfectly clear, But it doesn't seem like he focuses on it as much as the other ones who are really in the closet and gay, whether it's politicians or media figures like Brian Fisher, for example, who every 8 minutes is like, you know, the homosexuals are so hot. I mean, they're so terrible. He didn't talk about it all that much. But who knows, maybe it's true. When he says something like that, yeah, maybe there's a little Freudian stuff going on in the back of his mind. He's, you know, thinking about that. He's been on campaign trail for a few days. He hasn't been able to see his side piece. He's like, oh, God, I can't stop thinking about it. He goes out there. The guy Kevin Swanson we was talking to, that guy's definitely a closet case, 100%. That's the guy who said the other day that gays should be put to death because it's in the Bible, and that Dumbledore and Harry Potter, the U.S. needs to repent for them, and How to Train Your Dragon, we need to repent. Lunatic. Absolute lunatic. But he focuses on gay people every 8 seconds. He's definitely gay. But Ted Cruz, it never really struck me. But maybe Rogan's right. Hearing stuff like that, you got to start every day on your knees, where you perform fellatio and you twist the rod as you coddle the balls like that. That's what you do. They like that. I'm Ted Cruz. Meh. What, did I say that out loud? My bad. I let it slip a lot. I like how I've spent three minutes so far in this story, and I've only spoken about how he sounds incredibly gay. All right, but putting that aside and getting to the substance, because this is hopefully what all you were waiting for. He's just said atheists are not fit to be president. He just said that. There should be a massive backlash from everybody in the country, whether you're left-wing, whether you're or you're right-wing, or just the mainstream media establishment shills. I mean, that's unbelievable. You are openly advocating for discrimination. You said atheists aren't fit, quote, aren't fit to be president. You're not fit to be president if you don't start every day on your knees. So if you don't start every day talking to your imaginary friend, you're not fit to be president. What's funny is that if anything is true, it's the opposite. Now, to be clear here, no atheist has ever, I certainly haven't heard any atheist, even the most so-called militant among them, I've never heard them say, no Christians and no Muslims, no religious people, spiritualist, whatever, none of you can be president. No, we never said that. Why? Because by and large, we're smarter than you. So we realize, well, the majority of Christians are decent people. The majority of Muslims are decent people. You go down the list, all the different religious groups. Yeah, they're just normal people. First and foremost, they're people. Secondly, they're religious, and it's whatever. Now, the fundamentalists, yes, I have a problem with them being in power because they actually believe it, and oftentimes they have grotesque interpretations where they're very extreme. So them I have a problem with. But I would never say, you know, that Christians aren't fit to be president, because that's not true. But Ted says atheists aren't fit to be president, and there's a fucking whimper. Where CNN, where are you? MSNBC, where are you? Nightly News, where are you? And if a Democrat were to say the equivalent of that, imagine a Democrat said Christians aren't fit to be president. What would the media reaction be if that was the case? Every outlet would cover it. They'd be like, what the? That's fucking insane. But atheists, oh, they're a minority in America. And, you know, fuck them. Nobody really likes them anyway, so, yeah, who cares? Yell against them. Guys, don't tell me there's not discrimination against atheists. Don't tell me that people don't have this mindset where atheist equals immorality, because they do. People, there are a lot of people who don't research this, and they're just ignorant on it, and when they hear atheist, they think immoral. Or they think, you know, there's some sort of dark nihilist. No ethical code, doesn't believe in right and wrong, or, you know, what went wrong in your life that you became an atheist? You know, when did you lose faith? Oh, were you not raised right? These are the things that a lot of people think. And we need to beat back that perception, because it's not correct. It's not true. In fact, if you look at polling data, atheists and secularists are much more likely to actually be in line with the philosophy of Jesus when it comes to their moral values. Isn't that incredible? Like, there was a poll when the U.S., I mean, we probably still do it at the CIA black sites, but when it was big and we did torture at Abu Ghraib, and then we learned about the Senate torture report in Guantanamo, there were some polling surveys that were released. Did you know Christians support torture more than anybody else in the U.S., any other group? And, you know, atheists and Muslims, others were like, no, even violence against civilians. Muslims in America and atheists in America were more likely than anybody to say, under no circumstance. It was Christians. It was Protestants and Catholics who were like, maybe. So isn't it funny that what they're doing is they label themselves, I am a Christian, which in their mind means I'm the good guy. I'm one of the good guys. So since you've already said, by definition, I'm a good guy, well, then your actions are just irrelevant, right? It's just background noise. Whatever. If I act wrongly, it's okay, because I'm the good guy. So I meant well, so that's enough. So fuck off. But if an atheist does it, even if the atheist acts properly and has the right moral code, ooh, he's part of the other group. So bad, evil, wrong. You know, I can't associate with those guys. They're not fit to be president. So you're not fit unless you actually get on your knees and talk to your imaginary friend. This is the world we live in, where you have to believe in Mother Goose. You have to believe in Narnia. You have to believe in the Tooth Fairy in order for, you know, some people, specifically on the right, to take you seriously. Boy, does that show you how much they miss the mark when it comes to intelligence. Okay. Now let's go to the Washington Post and an amazing story about gay rights. We haven't covered a gay rights story in a while, but I don't want people to get the idea that because we got gay marriage, it's over. It's not over, and I'll prove it to you. The Washington Post is reporting that a judge in Utah decided to take away a kid from her adopted family. And the reason is her parents are gay. 2015. Quote, Utah couple Becky Pierce and April Hoagland decided to get married. They wanted to take in a foster child, so because the Supreme Court had signed off on gay marriage, Utah Child Services licensed the couple earlier this year. They welcomed a one-year-old girl into their home, but on Wednesday, a Utah judge decided to end this plan, ordering the girl removed from her foster home because he said she would be better off with heterosexual parents. Now, I have to admit that at the time this Washington Post article was released, they don't have the direct quotes yet from the judge, but all the different outlets are reporting that indeed the judge did say that the reason I'm rejecting you is because you're gay, and I think that the daughter would do better with heterosexual parents. That's all we know for sure. We don't have the direct quote, but that's what we know. All right, that's unbelievable because it's so obvious that this stems from his own personal religious beliefs. And another fact in the article that actually points that out and proves it is he went to Brigham Young University. So this guy's a devout Mormon. And he's like, yeah, I disagree with it. I disagree with gay people having kids, so no. How about that? No. Doesn't matter what your fucking opinion is. No, do you not understand the way a nation of laws works? Do you not understand that this was just adjudicated in court? This went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said you have a constitutional right under equal protection under the law if you're a gay person to get married. You're also allowed to have kids. You're also allowed to adopt. He's like, no, I disagree with it, so I'm going to be against it. But they're not even part of your religion. So what the fuck does it matter what your opinion is on this? What's hilarious is that these are the people who say, my rights are under attack. It's the fundamentalist religious folks who say, my rights are under attack, as they restrict rights for other people. It is projection 101. And furthermore, it's not even true when he says, this kid will do better with straight parents. Why? Because I say so. How about this? The University of Melbourne released a study, this is a year or so ago now, they found, quote, kids raised by same-sex couples actually do a bit better than the general population on measures of general health and family cohesion. Guys, they go on to explain that the kids who came from gay households were actually mentally healthier than kids who came from heterosexual households. Now, I want you to stop and think about this. What if we used their dumbass logic? What would we be able to say? What would liberals and gay people be able to say? They'd be able to say, oh, well, I guess we got to go round up all the heterosexual kids, right? All the kids who are in the heterosexual parents. hey, look, what do you want me to do, man? Your parenting outcomes are worse than those of gay parents. So if I'm using your logic, this isn't our logic, this is what you say. Well, the kids are better off if they're with gay people, so take them away from the straight parents and give them to gay people. That's not a very good argument, is it? In fact, it sounds utterly ridiculous when you frame it with straight people, right? Well, I mean, look at this argument through any other lens. Hey, you know, my kids with Asian parents do a little better than kids with black parents. Let's take away all the black kids and give them to Asian parents. That sounds ridiculous, right? No, like, that sounds knuckle-dragging stupid. Like, you're trying to micromanage society on a level that's Nazi-esque in what you do. Oh, we need better outcomes for the kids. Heil, das Himmler. Like, what are you saying? Whatever happened to freedom? We get it. If somebody's actually abusing kids or doing something like that, of course the state has a right to protect the kid and come in and take them away and put them in a foster home. Nobody's denying that. Nobody's denying that. But what we're talking about here is simply a matter of opinion and something you happen to dislike based on your factually incorrect religion. Oh, I don't like gay people, so I don't think they should be parents. Well, you can take a fucking hike. Nobody gives a shit. It's not your place. These are two consenting adults doing what they want to do and not hurting anybody else. So, you know, they need to stop with the social authoritarianism and the pseudo-theocracy they're setting up. I don't like it. It conflicts my religion, so you can't do it. I don't give a fuck if you like it or don't like it. And even the arguments that they make where they're trying to make a secular argument, it's still not true. Hey, gay parents are worse for kids. But that's not correct. I just told you it's the opposite. And if I'm using your logic, we would have to go round up the kids who have straight parents. But we're not going to do that, and we're not going to argue that, because we're not utter morons like you. Okay. Let me go to a really, really sad story here. This one is a pretty clear case of police brutality. A 56-year-old construction worker named Linwood Lambert, he's also called Ray, he was arrested in Virginia in 2013. Because, quote, officers said at the time they got noise complaints from within a Super 8 motel where Lambert was staying, and they found him in his room ranting and raving about dead bodies. Lambert was reported hallucinating and, quote, acting paranoid. So the cops, put him in handcuffs and they drove him to the hospital. So far, so good. But then this happened.
The police brought him to that hospital, but they never took him inside for help. For Linwood Lambert's family, it's been an agonizing mystery until now. New video, obtained exclusively by MSNBC, shows every moment of a hospital trip that turned deadly. Police rules caution against repeat tasings, but officers tased Lambert at the door to the ER. Again, as he lay on the ground. And again in a squad car, discharging 20 tasings, including while he was restrained, a violation of their own rules.
He died. He was tased 20 times in under 30 minutes, and all the while he was restrained as they were tasing him. That is against their own rules. It's also against their own rules to, after something like this happens, not bring them to the hospital, which leads to the next point here. They didn't do that. They didn't bring him to the hospital. They literally took him from the hotel, cuffed him, brought him to the hospital. He got out and ran when they opened the door. So that's when they started tasing him. They kept tasing him even though he was restrained, and then he died, and they never took him to the hospital. They got to the hospital, but after they tased him 20 times under 30 minutes, they brought him to the station. That's unreal. Now, guys, don't get me wrong here. You know, am I excusing the fact that he ran when you opened the door? Of course not. He shouldn't have ran. And I'll go even a step further and say, I'm not even all that outraged at doing one tase in that scenario. You still probably shouldn't do it because it should have been pretty clear at that point that you're dealing with somebody here who has mental issues. Because the whole story is, oh, he's hallucinating and he's ranting and raving about dead bodies. There are no dead bodies. He's, quote, acting paranoid. So you should have said, red flag, has mental issues here. Be careful. And be careful for both your sake, for yours and for his. So, but even with saying that, if a guy, if you open the door, the guy gets out and runs, what are you going to do? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And in the heat of the moment, I'm not going to blame the officers for doing one tase. Just to get him under control. Say, okay, whoa, why are you running? Why are you running? But they didn't just do that. They did it once. All of them did. Three of them were standing there tasing him. Already overkill. Then they tase him 20 times as he's restrained and in front of the hospital. And then they bring him to the station. Then we bring him into the hospital. No, what are you doing? No, see, this is a clear example of the problem is the training. Guys, in that scenario, all of the training should be clear that after you get him under control, you bring him in the hospital. And by the way, in the hospital, you know what they have? Sedatives, tranquilizers. You want him to calm down, that's the way to get him to calm down. Don't tase him 20 times when he has mental issues. And you already know that. So this is where de-escalation tactics are so important. They're so vital. We covered the story a while back on they've looked into, they've done studies all around the U.S. Okay, how much time do officers put into this? And at the bottom of the list is de-escalation training and finding a way to calm the situation and talk people down. The very top of the list, physical self-defense, use of force. So this is why we see situations like this. No, it's inexcusable. These are people we're dealing with here. And I know it's a tough job to be a cop. Nobody's denying that. But you signed up for the job. And if you sign up for the job, there are responsibilities that go along with it. One of the responsibilities is, in a situation where you're dealing with somebody who's clearly has mental issues and is already detained, you don't tase them. And again, they did violate, you know, the rules there, which means that proper action should be taken. I don't know whether it's just firing. You probably bring these people up on charges. I mean, look at what they did. It's horrendous what they did. But what we need to take away from this is you have to change this training and you have to stress de-escalation tactics because there's simply no logical argument. I know that hindsight is 20/20, but there's no logical argument for doing what you did. He was already cuffed. Again, I get it. I'll let it slide if you tase him once just to control him when he randomly ran. But after that, you tase him 20 times in under 30 minutes, and you don't bring him to the hospital. Now you're the criminal, not him. All right, I got two left here, and then maybe we'll finish a tad early. The Guardian has an article by Anish Kapoor on the troubling rise of fundamentalism in India, specifically within the Indian government. So he says the following, quote, India's openness to social and religious minorities, more than 500 million people, is at serious risk. Of late, Prime Minister Modi's regime has effectively tolerated, if not encouraged, an army of Hindu activists who monitor and violently discipline those suspected of eating beef, disobeying caste rules, or betraying the Hindu nation. All right, so I'm already a little nervous at reading that passage right here. Anytime you hear people saying, this is a Muslim nation, this is an Islamic nation, or this is a Christian nation, that's usually code word for, and fuck the minorities. You know, they're not in our case real Americans. They're not real Indians. You know, this is the mindset of exclusivity. This is the mindset of bigotry, typically. And especially when you're enforcing rules like how dare you eat beef? I know, yeah, oh, that's my religion, the cow is sacred. I don't care. You can believe that. You can live on that. I still think you're wrong, but you could live like that. Once you start enforcing it on people who don't believe like you believe, oh, well, now you're committing a crime, and now it's beyond acceptable. And then, I just have to say it. The caste system. Really? 2015. It's 2015. You're going to have the caste system? No, but see, this is what I mean. It's not just... I don't agree with any liberals who would also be moral relativists who say, well, that's just how they live, bro, and you can't judge it from our context. It's just a different way. No way is right or wrong, bro. No, that's not true. That's not correct. It's actually better for human beings. There is less human suffering and more human happiness when you don't have a caste system where you say, you know, you're an untouchable and you're never going to leave that because I say so, because that's what society says and because that's just how it is. Well, no, then you're a fucking asshole if you believe that that system makes sense. That system is deeply conservative and wrong. It's not good for people. And I'm totally comfortable with saying that's a worse system. That's a worse system than actually having equality among people. All right, let's continue here. Many Indian journalists and human rights activists have been harassed and threatened with sedition charges. For example, Tista Setalvad, who still seeks justice for the victims of communal violence, and Santosh Yadav, arrested in September on what Amnesty International believes are fabricated charges resulting from his journalism exposing police brutality against indigenous people. A few weeks ago, even a musician who sang a satirical song was charged with anti-Indian activity. Oh boy. So if there's any dissent, you know, if you speak out against the government, if you speak out against fundamentalist Hinduism, did you just stand up for the indigenous people who we've been oppressing? Well, now we're going to put you in jail. Oh boy. This is a bad road to go down. They say a Hindu version of the Taliban is asserting itself, in which Indians are being told it's either this view or else. No good. Now, we covered a story recently about a Muslim man in India who was lynched. And he was lynched because they said, you ate beef. Now, he actually didn't eat beef. But even if he did, you can't fucking lynch a guy because he ate beef. And they say that they're essentially these Hindu fundamentalist mobs that go around and enforce these things. Oh, no, this is bad. And there's been at least 4 other cases of that since the last story that we did on this about a month or so ago. You gotta stop. You gotta kneecap it. And unfortunately, Prime Minister Modi, he is wildly popular in the West. I don't get it for the life of me. I mean, I guess maybe because he wants business interests and connections with the West in that sense, that we love him. But you know, it's governments of the West, leaders in the West, you gotta speak up about this. And you got to say, hey, maybe we do sanctions or we boycott you or we don't do trade if you don't clean your act up and stop doing the worst abuses that you're doing. But naturally, you guys know the way it works in the world. Unfortunately, today, because of corporate hegemony and our corrupt governments, as long as the money relationship is good, we can overlook anything else. All right, let's go to one more here. And this is bad news for pretty much everybody. Medical Daily is reporting that stress can quite literally change your brain. They say, quote, being overworked or having arguments at home can affect the size and structure of the human brain as well as how it functions. Stress starts in the hypothalamus, where a series of interactions between endocrine glands in the brain and the kidneys take place. This controls how your body responds to stress. For example, when your brain detects a stressful situation, you instantly release the hormone cortisol, which primes the body for a fight-or-flight response. High levels of cortisol over a prolonged period of time increases activity among neural connections in the amygdala, which is the brain's fear center. This increase can cause electric signals in the hippocampus, the center of learning, memories, and stress control, to deteriorate, weakening a person's ability to control stress. And they say excess cortisol levels can also change your brain to shrink, resulting in a loss of synaptic connections between neurons and the shrinking of the prefrontal cortex, which is a part of the brain that regulates behaviors like concentration, decision-making, judgment, and social interactions. Cortisol may also cause the hippocampus to produce less brain cells. Sweet Jesus, you get dumber when you're stressed. No, but you know why this is so fascinating to me? I've learned just from my own life, and I'm sure you guys have also had similar, you know, anecdotal experiences where at times when you are more miserable and you're just not happy for whatever reason, it could be your job or school or personal relationships, whatever the case is, whenever you're less happy, it's not just like a mental thing. Like, it also is a physical thing. Like, you also can feel it physically. It's like a weight is on you. You're not as sharp. You just don't care as much. You're lackadaisical. So it's, you get the sense that, well, this isn't just in my mind. It's quite literally, you know, you feel like shit. They even say there were articles recently that said that heartbreak is like a real thing. Like, if you're with somebody for years and you love the person, then you guys break up. Like, no, you're physically feeling like withdrawal effects, as if you were doing cocaine for 2 years and you stopped. You know, your body goes in, oh, my God, you know, that person was akin to a drug, essentially. So they're kind of taking that a step further here, and they're saying, oh, yeah, not only is that true, we know exactly what's happening. You have fewer brain cells. You're not able to concentrate. You know, your brain, the structure changes. It literally shrinks. You have higher stress hormones. So in other words, if you're perpetually stressed, you'll probably put yourself in an early grave. Oh, that's not good. And they go on to explain, you know, insofar as there are answers to try to get make this better. Meditating is one thing they bring up. I'm skeptical. I know there's people who swear by it. It never worked for me. You know, I tried it a couple times, and I was just like, then what? It was always a, and then? It never was like, you know, oh, it happens. And I have people who say, well, you're not doing it right. I always hate that argument because it's like, well, anybody can say that when something doesn't work. It just simply doesn't work. You know, like whether it's a bullshit product or a placebo pill, it's not working. Well, you're not taking it right. You're not doing it right. Well, then no, maybe the product is the fucking problem. Maybe the thing itself is the problem. Maybe the problem is not with you. So, but anyway, I'm going off on a side rant on meditation here. They say exercising is something that works. That makes sense. You release more happiness hormones, if you will, or happiness chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, et cetera. And they say, just, you know, like more vacation time, relaxing, taking it easy. And, I mean, I guess the response to those last two is duh. Like, this is what you need. And this is also why, to tie it into economics, I've argued for a long time now, the way we do it is unsustainable. With you work 5 days, you're off 2 days. And shut the fuck up. And you got, like, one vacation week on average in America, you know, for your regular person. I think that's not enough. And you're kind of putting yourself in an early grave and limiting your quality of life. And we need to try to rearrange this thing to foster more human happiness. And maybe that's a 4-day work week. Maybe that's 6 weeks paid vacation. There's a variety of ways to do it. But just know that, you know, your gut feeling is true, that when you're stressed, it actually has physical effects too. It's not just mental. All right, guys. I'm out of time. I love you. And I'll see you tomorrow. Everybody have a great night. Peace. Mwah.